Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. The UN looks into allegation of sexual impropriety by a peacekeeper in South Sudan.
It was alleged that one of the teenaged girls had been touched inappropriately by a member of the Nepalese contingent in exchange for money. There was no allegation made of rape.
And South Sudan has the dubious distinction of being labeled the most fragile country on earth again.
If you look at demographic pressures, it's very, very high pressure. Refugees are about as high as the list can go. State legitimacy, economy, security apparatus. So in terms of the numbers themselves, there hasn't been a lot of change from one year to the next.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. UNMISS says it is investigating an allegation of sexual impropriety by a UN peacekeeper in Awil. Awil State authorities say they have opened a police case against the peacekeeper. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has reports from Juba.
UNMISS sent a recorded message in which its spokesperson, Francisca Mold, says the allegation of sexual abuse first surfaced on April 11th when four girls were caught trying to enter the UN base in Awil through a perimeter fence.
It was alleged that one of the teenaged girls had been touched inappropriately by a member of the Nepalese contingent in exchange for money. There was no allegation made of rape.
Mold says when the allegation reached her office, UNMISS immediately dispatched a team to Awil to investigate the incident.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan deployed a sexual exploitation and abuse immediate response team to Awil to gather information and preserve evidence prior to the launch of an investigation by the troop contributing country concerned.
The UNMISS spokesperson says the incident has been reported to an independent agency known as the Office of Internal Oversight Services.
The Federal Democratic Republic of Nepal has also been notified by the UN of the allegation and is in the process of appointing a team of national investigation officers who will conduct an investigation as per normal procedures relating to military contingents.
She says if found guilty, the Nepalese peacekeeper will be held accountable for his actions.
UNMISS has a zero tolerance, no excuses, and no second chances approach to sexual exploitation and abuse. It is committed to putting the victim's rights and dignity first and ensuring that there is transparency and accountability for such actions.
Awil State Information Minister Deng Deng says the Criminal Investigation Department in Awil is also investigating the allegation.
I went to the CID police and I asked them about this case. They are still making investigations and after they finish, they will file it and give us a report.
Earlier this year, UNMISS recalled to Juba 46 members of a police unit stationed at its protection of civilians site in Wau after a group of police officers from Ghana were accused of involvement in transactional sex with displaced women sheltering in the UN-run facility. UNMISS said it was investigating the issue and said if the accusation was true, it was a clear violation of the UN and UNMISS Code of Conduct, which prohibits any sexual relationships with vulnerable individuals, including beneficiaries of assistance. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
For the second year in a row, South Sudan is ranked the most fragile country in the world, according to the Fund for Peace Fragile States Index. The index measures social, economic, and political pressure of 178 countries. Nate Haken, program director at the Fund for Peace, says South Sudan has made very little progress over the past year, but not enough to remove itself from the world's most fragile country status.
If you look at demographic pressures, it's very, very high pressure. Refugees are about as high as the list can go. State legitimacy, economy, security apparatus. So in terms of the numbers themselves, there hasn't been a lot of change from one year to the next. You have a little bit of vacillation, you know, within a very narrow band. among some of the indicators, but generally, no. It's been under, you know, very high pressure across all social, economic, political, and security kind of sectors in the index. However, of course, if you look under the hood, or if you look kind of more deeply, you do see that there's been, you know, change. For instance, last year there was there seemed to be some movement, some positive and some negative on the political front. There was the unilateral ceasefire that was declared, and the national dialogue that was launched, and now there's the kind of going now, I guess, into what is the third round of talks on trying to resolve this crisis, and that's all very, very good. But at the same time, you know, you have ongoing violence, and even when you have peace talks that are ramping up, that is a very delicate time in any conflict cycle, because particularly in a situation like South Sudan, where you've got so much splintering, groups begin to jostle for a seat at the table. They jostle for relevance. And to get relevant, sometimes you have to make noise, and that can be destabilizing.
South Sudan isn't the only place where we see conflict or mass displacement. Other parts of the world see food shortages as well. So why is South Sudan different in this regard, so as to earn it the top spot on the list?
The index, it looks at 12 indicators. It looks at demographic pressures, which looks at things like health, and pandemics, and food insecurity, natural disasters, and then it looks at refugees, and it looks at economic factors, inequality. So when you aggregate all of those things up, some countries end up being higher on the list than others. But if you disaggregate by indicator, I think you can see a richer story. And if you look at trends over time, particularly disaggregated by indicator, you can have a much more kind of nuanced and deep understanding of what the index is telling you. It's useful to look at the index and as a ranking, but it's more useful to look at the index and to disaggregate and look at trends over time.
Often when I speak to government spokesmen about reports just like this one, they're usually quick to dismiss it or downplay the findings. Why should they pay attention to this particular report?
It's a useful tool for tracking sort of empirically a range of indicators, a range of factors, and it can be helpful for generating dialogue or having conversations around what might be the drivers and the triggers around these indicators. Certainly, one should never take a report like this and consider it to be the end of the conversation. It should instead be the beginning of a conversation.
And Nate, is there any good news? Did you see any interesting trends this past year?
If you look at the overall score, to the extent that the overall score is indicative, South Sudan, although it is the worst in overall ranking, it did improve slightly overall from the previous year. It was a very slight overall improvement, but nevertheless, we'll take what we can get.
That was Nate Haken, Programs Director at Fund for Peace. He was speaking to me from Washington. Traders in Jonglei State Capital Bor are accusing some police officers suspected of breaking into their shops at night to steal cash and food items. The traders say they have lost millions of South Sudanese pounds and believe the police are involved. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Traders in Bor say at least a dozen shops vandalized this month. The traders say last night thieves made off with 200,000 South Sudanese pounds in cash and stock worth 300,000 South Sudanese pounds from the Maror market. Mike Bol owns a shop that looted last night. Speaking in Dinka, Bol describes what happened in his shop.
They stole 7 sacks of sugar, sacks of beans, and 5 jerrycans of cooking oil. I am still counting the stock now to know exactly what I lost. But I wonder how the thieves carried all these items. Were they using a vehicle? I don't know. I got one jerrycan of cooking oil at the police station this morning. I asked the police where are the thieves, and they said the thieves had run away.
Bol says he does not understand why the police are unable to make any arrest.
I am fed up with the police today. I told them that you, the police, are the thieves. How come almost the items in my shop were stolen in your presence? I am not convinced that these are normal thieves. I suspect some among those who conduct night patrols are part of the problem.
Bol says he pays taxes for security, and yet the nighttime robberies continue. Trader Ajeb Abdul Al-Salam says his grocery shop was also looted last night. Al-Salam, who is a Sudanese national, has been doing business in South Sudan since 2014. Speaking in Arabic, Abdul Al-Salam says the thieves stole both cash and stock.
The thief entered the shop from the roof and took cash totaling to 180 South Sudanese pounds. The thief took some cash as well as some items and broke the door on his way out. The shop was left open, and that's how I found it this morning.
Al-Salam is urging the authorities to improve security and protect traders' property, especially at night. Mabiuru Kuala Ajuk works at the Jonglei State Chamber of Commerce as a market supervisor. He says his office has received reports of many burglaries, especially this month.
Civilians need security and traders need security, because if there is no police, there will be no security. As a trader, you close your shop in the evening and leave the responsibility of security in the hands of police, and you come in the morning and sell. But if you come and find your shop broken into, like what happened this morning, it is not good.
Major Daniel Mabur is in charge of the police night patrols in Bor. He confirmed thieves broke into two shops last night. Speaking in Arabic, Mabur says the police tried to intervene when they learned thieves were breaking into shops last night.
They went there, but they saw light from the security officers and ran. Some bullets were shot after them, but they ran away. It's in today's incident that we have not arrested anybody, but last week one person was arrested and is now being investigated. The one who is arrested is a police officer.
Mabur insists the police are carrying out their duties, but admits they sometimes fail due to challenges of their work.
The work of protecting the market is very hard. My forces have to stand and move around the market until morning without sufficient food. Nowadays, they live on one meal per day. This can cause sickness. These days, some of them are sick. The work is heavy and the market is big and the forces are few. One of our colleagues was captured by these criminals. They beat him up and he died the day before yesterday, and this is because he was carrying out his duties at the market.
Mabur urges the traders to cooperate with police so they can work together to prevent more nighttime robberies. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Israel scraps plans to deport thousands of African migrants. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe Africa can do without aid from Western powers? Why or why not?
Yes, we have so many things. We are blessed as Africans. We have fertile soil. Without even applying like manure or something of that kind, you can still plant. We have so many things that can earn us living without getting aid from the Western countries.
Africa with no aid from US, I think it's a big no. We are not yet there.
Africa has everything it needs. We have a population. We also have resources. What we need is actually leadership and a change of the value system.
Africa can do it. Africa is capable of doing that. That aid. One country, Libya, if Libya was able to do it without the Western aid, we are all able to do it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Israeli government has abandoned its plan to deport thousands of African migrants. Robert Berger has the details for VOA from Jerusalem.
About 37,000 African migrants have gotten a reprieve after Israel canceled deportation orders that had left the community in limbo. In February, the government handed out papers to thousands of African males, which amounted to an ultimatum: leave the country in 2 months or go to prison. The plan was abandoned when Rwanda backed out of a deal to take the migrants in, saying it could not guarantee their safety. In a radio interview, Public Security Minister Gilad Erdan admitted that the government has no solution for the problem of the infiltrators, as they are called here. He blamed Israel's Supreme Court and human rights groups, which warned that forcibly deporting the migrants back to Africa would endanger their lives. Most of the Africans came from war-torn Eritrea and Sudan and entered Israel illegally over the past decade. Techlit Mikhael, who came from Eritrea, breathed a sigh of relief.
I am very happy to see the deportation policy is cancelled. And now it is the right time for the Israeli government to give a solution for the asylum seeker who came from Africa, a refugee status, or to answer their asylum claim application.
But the Israeli government rejects the Africans' claim they are refugees, with this legislator describing it as a lie. Yoav Kish of the ruling right-wing Likud party said they are economic migrants seeking to escape poverty in Africa, and therefore Israel is not obligated to take them in. Officials blame the Africans for rising crime in southern Tel Aviv and accuse them of damaging the Jewish character of the state. So the government is looking for new ways to pressure them to leave voluntarily. But many Israelis are sympathetic toward the migrants. They say Israel has a moral responsibility to offer them asylum because the country was built by Jewish refugees fleeing the Holocaust. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Ugandan officials say despite questions being raised by the UNHCR and Israel's scrapping of its plan to transport migrants out of the country, Uganda stands ready to accept 500 Eritrean and Sudanese migrants from Israel. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Kampala.
Most of the migrants denied refugee status in Israel are Eritrean and Sudanese. In early April, Israel said it reached a deal with the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, to allow 16,000 migrants to be transferred to a number of developed countries. In exchange, Israel would give residency to an equal number of migrants. The plan fell apart after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu caved into pressure from his right-wing base. Days later, Uganda accepted to host 500 Eritrean and Sudanese migrants, but the UNHCR spokesperson, Dunia Khan, says the refugee agency was never consulted.
UNHCR hasn't been a party to the bilateral discussion that has been taking place between Uganda and Israel.
Uganda's Minister of State for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees, Musa Echweru, said earlier that his country was trying to help Israel.
The State of Israel, working with other refugee managing organizations, has requested Uganda to allow about 500 Eritrean and Sudanese refugees to relocate to Uganda. The government and the ministry responsible for refugees, my ministry, has positively considered their request. We have given an okay, so the process should be starting soon.
The minister did not explain where Uganda plans to host the migrants. Uganda currently hosts 1.4 million refugees who shelter in settlements and receive assistance from UNHCR. Khan says the UN Refugee Agency also wants answers.
I don't have the full knowledge of what has been agreed or not. We are seeking more clarity and information from the government of Uganda.
Israel's initial plan to deport thousands of African migrants drew a wave of criticism from abroad as well as from Holocaust survivors and civil society groups at home. Minister Chweru defended his government's controversial decision to accept the Eritrean and Sudanese migrants, saying many are relocated to a third country.
We have also relocated some refugees from here. Some have gone to Canada, some want to pursue studies, some have gone to the United States, some have gone to Australia, relocated by Uganda. We consult the country and say we have this category of refugees, they would wish to come to your country for the following reason. We approach a friendly country. When the friendly country gives a go-ahead, then we process and that person. We have relocated so many.
Mary Nyalifa is a South Sudanese refugee who was deported from Israel to South Sudan in 2012 after spending more than 6 years in the Jewish state. She says when conflict broke out in South Sudan in 2013, an Israeli organization that supported her during her stay in Israel advised her to come to Uganda with her two Israeli-born children. Nyalifa says for 4 years, the organization has paid all of her daughter's school expenses.
They know me from Israel. That's why they call me, Mary, where are you? Because I say, I'm there in Juba, but it's my situation. But there's war too much there in Juba. And now they call me, they say, okay, you go in Uganda. And I come here in Uganda. And they told me again, and you're the big child. You take there in the school there.
Israel has abandoned their plan to forcibly deport thousands of African migrants who entered the country illegally. Israeli authorities said Wednesday the decision was made after failing to find a country willing to take them. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
The World Health Organization is joining a worldwide call to stop a resurgence of malaria that threatens much of the progress made over the past decade. To mark World Malaria Day, the WHO is pushing for urgent action and money to get the global fight against this ancient scourge back on track. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
For many years, World Malaria Day has been a cause for celebration, but not this year. World Health Organization data show that starting in 2016, progress has been at a standstill and hopes of ending the global epidemic by 2030 are slipping away. Director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, says some of the gains made in reducing the number of cases and deaths in countries across all regions of the world are being reversed.
As a consequence, we now have about 216 million cases of malaria every year, in excess of 440,000 deaths every year. History has taught us very clearly that when we stop making progress, it's not that we just stand still, but we go backwards, and then malaria comes back. And comes back with a vengeance.
About 90% of all malaria cases and deaths occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Children under the age of 5, pregnant women, and patients with HIV/AIDS are most at risk. Alonso says global political commitment must be renewed, and donors in affected countries must increase the financial resources needed to successfully tackle malaria.
And we need new and improved tools to prevent, diagnose, and treat malaria. Our sense is that with the resources available today and with the tools we have today, we have seen the limit of what can be achieved.
The issue of malaria's resurgence came up on the sidelines of a Commonwealth summit in London this month, where Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, who has invested billions of dollars in fighting malaria, pledged yet another $1 billion to the effort. WHO estimates $5.5 billion are needed each year to wage a successful global fight against malaria. However, only about half that amount has been pledged. Vector control is the main way to prevent and reduce the spread of malaria. Alonso says better insecticides, better insecticide-treated mosquito nets, as well as better drugs are essential in combating the disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan and Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayen. UNMISS says it is investigating an allegation of sexual impropriety by a UN peacekeeper in Awil. Awil state authorities say they've opened a police case against a Nepalese peacekeeper. UNMISS spokesperson Francesca Mold says the allegation first surfaced on April 11th when four teenage girls were caught trying to enter the UN base in Awil through the perimeter fence. She says when the allegation reached her office, UNMISS immediately dispatched a team to Awil to investigate the matter. She says UNMISS deployed a sexual exploitation and abuse immediate response team to gather information and preserve evidence prior to the launch of an official investigation by Nepal. The UNMISS spokesperson says the incident has been reported to an independent agency known as the Office of Internal Oversight Services as well. She says if found guilty, the peacekeeper will be held accountable for his actions. For the second straight year, South Sudan has been ranked the most fragile country in the world. That's according to the Fund for Peace's Fragile States Index. The index measures social, economic, and political pressures of 178 countries. Nate Haken, program director at the Fund for Peace, says South Sudan has made some progress over the past year, but not enough to remove it from the world's most fragile country index. He says Hayden says the recent attempts like the national dialogue could help the country in the future rebound. And finally, the Israeli government has abandoned a plan to deport thousands of African migrants. About 37,000 migrants have gotten a reprieve after Israel canceled deportation orders that had left the community in limbo. In February, the government handed out papers to thousands of African males, which amounted to an ultimatum: either leave the country in 2 months or go to prison. The plan was abandoned when Rwanda backed out of a deal to take the migrants in, saying it couldn't guarantee their safety. Public Security Minister Gilad Erden admitted the government has no solution for the problem of what he called the infiltrators, as they are called in Israel. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Body Language by Boney James. To Justin Simpleman with the song You Are One in a Million. Again, that was Justin Simpleman with his song You Are One in a Million. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We appreciate you being here with us. We want to hear what you think about our show. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.